the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science!
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to Journey number 24 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring Sherlock Holmes in New Year's Eve off Scilly Isles. I misspoke when I introduced last week's episode as Journey number 24. That one was, of course, Journey number 23. I am your misguided guide, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. I hope you enjoyed your Christmas and or holiday vacation, and that you are gearing up for a tremendous 2012. Don't let the Mayans trouble you. Seeing as how the new Sherlock Holmes movie, Game of Shadows, is out, I thought this would be a good time to run an old-time incarnation of Arthur Conan Doyle's detective. The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes was an old-time radio show which ran from late 1939 to mid-1947. Most episodes were written by the team of Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher. John Stanley, who you hear in this episode, was the third actor to play Sherlock Holmes, preceded by Basil Rathbone and Tom Conway. Nigel Bruce played Dr. Watson throughout the entire series. Now come with me as we journey into peril on the high seas.
From New York, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and 924 leading retail stores from coast to coast present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character of Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sherlock Holmes is portrayed by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley, and the dramatization are by Edith Meiser. Well, here we are once again on the threshold of Dr. Watson's study. We find Mr. Holmes' genial biographer strutting up and down in front of his fireplace. Evening, Doctor. You look fit. The Christmas festivities don't seem to have got you down.
I am fit, Mr. Harris, very fit. Better than that, I am rather well fitted. Great Scott, man, where are your eyes?
Why, Dr. Watson, don't tell me Santa Claus brought you a Clipper Craft suit.
Well, why not? Just because I'm a wee bit venerable doesn't mean I'm antique. I still enjoy making a good impression, don't you know?
Well, in that suit, it'll be the girls that go when you walk down the street. Seriously now, Doctor, suppose you tell us what tonight's story is to be about.
Well, tonight I thought I'd relate how Holmes and I spent New Year's Eve off the Scilly Isles.
The Scilly Isles? That sounds appropriate, Doctor.
The name of these particular islands is spelled S-C-I-L-L-Y. They are located roughly 100 miles southwest of Land's End, Mr. Harris.
Oh, what in the world were you doing there on New Year's Eve?
Trying to prevent a great maritime catastrophe. You remember what happened to the Titanic? You know what happened to the Lusitania? Well, the lives of those on the ocean liner Gigantic were in even greater danger when Holmes and I went over the side on New Year's Eve in the year 1912. Oh, but good heavens. There I go getting ahead of myself again. Suppose I fix us a Tom and Jerry while you tell our listeners how to start the year right in a Clipper Craft coat.
Fair enough, Dr. Watson. Millions of men, like you, will start the new year in a smart new Clipper Craft suit and overcoat. Yes, today more men than ever before wear Clipper Craft clothes. For we've sold more Clippercraft clothes than ever before in our entire history. There's a reason, of course. The wise old American public, with its eye for value, has pronounced Clippercraft the most remarkable clothing buys they've ever seen. The reason for these amazing values is the sensational Clippercraft plan, concentrating the buying power of 924 of the nation's leading stores from coast to coast. It accounts for tremendous savings in manufacturing and distribution costs. That's why truly fine Clippercraft suits are only $40 and $45. Why Clippercraft topcoats and overcoats are only $40, and sport jackets only $26.50. Clippercraft values are downright amazing. Compare them with clothes selling for many dollars more. Now, Dr. Watson, to return to the New Year's Eve you and Sherlock Holmes celebrated on the good ship Gigantic.
Yes. Here's your Tom and Jerry, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Doctor.
Be careful, don't burn yourself. Yes, it was probably the most hectic New Year's Eve I've ever experienced. Nothing is as terrifying to a seafaring man as the thought of fire aboard ship. Panic. The isolation. Oh, but that's neither here nor there. Yes, let me see. It was the last day of the year, 1912. Its inception was sufficiently placid, I must say. A light snow was falling as Holmes and I seated ourselves on either side of a well-filled breakfast table. The flames of our sea coal fire reflected themselves cheerfully in the generous coffee pot. The whole house was filled with the pleasant aroma of the stuffing Mrs. Hudson was preparing for our New Year's goose. Suddenly there came a frantic jangle of the front door bell.
No, definitely no.
No what, Holmes?
Whoever it is that's pulling our front doorbell out by the roots, whatever his problem is, I'm definitely not interested. Yes, Watson, being the world's greatest consulting detective has its disadvantages. People always manage to get into difficulties at the most inopportune moments.
Yes, you should try being a doctor, Holmes. No female since Eve has ever decided to become a mother at a convenient time.
Oh, come in, confound it.
Mr. Holmes? Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Naturally. Whatever your problem is, I warn you, it'll have to wait till after the holidays.
But it can't, Mr. Holmes. Close to 2,000 lives are at stake. I pray to heaven you'll be able to reach them before it's too late.
Reach whom? Where? And what is this disaster you anticipate with such trepidation?
The steamship Gigantic, Mr. Holmes. She should be somewhere off the Scilly Isles by midnight. We've been reliably informed that an attempt will be made to set fire to her at that time. If successful, it'll be the greatest disaster in all maritime history.
Yes, in that case, I suppose I shall have to forego the little celebration I'd planned for this evening.
Have to? Really, Holmes, you are a cold-blooded fish.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't believe you've met my colleague, Dr. Watson. Mr. Pembroke.
Reginald Pembroke.
How do you do, sir?
I'm chairman of the board of Floyd's, the famous insurance company.
Oh, then your desire to prevent this disaster isn't entirely humanitarian.
Not entirely, but neither is it altogether mercenary. There's more at stake than the lives of the passengers on board the Gigantic. If she goes down, the financial stability of the British Empire goes with her.
Interesting, eh, Watson? Continue, Mr. Pembroke.
You may not be aware, Mr. Holmes, that during this past year, there have been a terrifying number of marine catastrophes.
Holmes knows everything, Mr. Pembroke.
I'm quite cognizant of the fact that quite a few of the newest and fastest British liners have been destroyed at sea by fire, storm, and accident.
Ah, they weren't accidents, Mr. Holmes, I assure you.
Quite. The Egyptian Star was destroyed by fire in the Persian Gulf. 800 lives lost. The Lord Nelson disappeared in a typhoon in the Indian Ocean. No survivors. The Southern Cross exploded and sank off the coast of Brazil. 1,200 casualties. The Wellington, the Lady Jane Grey, and the El Dorado all caught fire in different parts of the Pacific. Total deaths, over 2,000. The greatest disaster was last April, when the Titanic ran into an iceberg with a loss of over 1,500 souls.
The public's becoming panicky about traveling on British ships. The ships of other nationalities are taking all our trade. Three banks, nearly 10 investment concerns with large marine interests have gone to the wall. Even Floyd is not too secure. But that is not the most serious aspect of the situation.
Really?
Good Lord, don't tell me there's worse to come.
Much worse, Dr. Watson. Those ships disappeared in many parts of the world. They were sunk by diverse methods. One factor, however, was the same in each disaster.
And that was?
The cargo carried by each ship was gold. English gold.
Oh.
If it ever became known how much British bullion lies at the bottom of the seven seas, British credit would be badly crippled. As a matter of fact, the Bank of England has been forced to import a large shipment of gold from Canada.
And it's something gigantic. Good Lord, no wonder you're upset.
The whole economic structure of the British Empire is at stake, Mr. Holmes. Nothing must happen to the gigantic.
What makes you think anything will?
A cable was sent shortly after the gigantic left Queenstown. She makes a stop in Ireland on her eastbound voyage, you know. She sails shortly before dawn this morning. The gangplanks have been drawn in, the last line have been cast off, and the great propellers have begun to churn. Suddenly the dockmaster noticed someone sliding down the ship's side on a rope.
Hi, look up there, sir. Some fool's climbed over the side. He's coming down on a rope.
Go back, you fool. Go back. He'll be killed.
He'll never make the dock. He'll fall in the water if he's swept under the ship.
No, no. He's pushing the rope away from the ship with his feet. He's swinging out. He's going to jump.
He made it.
Someone up on the bridge has seen him. He's calling to him.
The chap's picked himself up. He's shouting back.
Happy New Year to you up there. Happy New Year. In hell.
Good Lord. I know the man, sir. It's Smoky Joe, the firebird. If a gigantic don't catch fire between here and Southampton, I'm a Dutchman.
Smoky Joe, seems to me we've heard of him before, eh, Watson? Not merely as an expert arsonist, but a dangerous pyromaniac as well. They caught him, I hope, Mr. Pembroke.
No, no, Mr. Holmes. Unfortunately, he was too quick for them. He crawled down a ladder and disappeared among the pilings under the docks.
So, the gigantic is headed for Southampton with a nice bit of Joe's handiwork aboard.
You think it's a firebomb, eh, Holmes?
Not necessarily, Watson. There are many ingenious ways of starting a fire, you know. Whoever hired Joe would prefer to have it happen well out to sea, I imagine.
Our thought exactly, Mr. Holmes. We've wirelessed Captain Brooks to make a search, of course, but on a ship the size of the gigantic, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. You are our one hope, Mr. Holmes. If only you couldn't get on board in time.
And how do you suggest I go about that little assignment?
The chairman of the Great Western Railway has placed the Royal Train at your disposal. All other traffic will be cleared off the tracks. Now, you should reach Land's End shortly after lunch. My yacht, the Albatross, will be waiting for you in the harbor at St. Ives. It's a very speedy little craft, and with any luck, you should sight the gigantic around 11 o'clock tonight.
Yes, 11 o'clock. Was it Smoky Joe called out? Happy New Year in hell. It won't be New Year till midnight. If we reach the gigantic by 11, we may just possibly be in time. Six bells. It's 11 o'clock. Confound this fog. We've had to reduce our speed to half.
Oh, we'll never catch up to the gigantic now, Holmes.
Nonsense. She's had to slow down, too. I only hope we don't miss her entirely in this fog.
I don't really care.
You don't sound very fit, Watson. What's up?
Do you have to use that unfortunate expression?
And tell me you're feeling squeamish.
It's this confounded roll. I can stand a good brisk sea, but this bobbing about in a teacup.
Pity I didn't bring the Mothersill seasick pills.
Oh, Mothersill. There's only one remedy for this sort of thing.
What's that?
Staying on shore. Jolly way to spend New Year's Eve, this is. Who do you suppose is responsible for these confounded sinkings, anyway?
Mr. Pembroke seems to feel it's a foreign plot. The Middle East European shipping industries benefit the most, of course.
Holmes, did you hear that?
By Jove, yes.
Sounds like an ocean liner, right enough.
Yes, we're signaling her.
Scott, there she is, the gigantic looming out of the fog. Looks like a mountain coming at us.
Yes, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson coming aboard. Let down a ladder. Here's the ladder, Watson. Think you can manage it?
I'd climb up the Eiffel Tower on a clothesline if it would get me off this bouncing cockle shell.
Quite an impressive array of instruments you have up here on the bridge, Captain Brooks.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. On the gigantic, we have the latest of everything. And none of it's any real use in case of fire.
I'd sooner face a typhoon or a shipwreck or a mutiny even, dodrat it, than a fire on board ship.
Surely a ship this size should be fairly fireproof.
That's what you might think, Dr. Watson. But there are three factors that make a fire on a luxury liner dangerous. First, there's all the confounded ornamental woodwork that's used in the passenger construction. Second, there's the fact that once a fire gets a firm hold, it's fed by drafts that rush through the ventilating system. And third, there is the element of panic. Nothing makes people behave more like wild beasts quicker than the cry of fire. In case of fire, you have, of course, an alarm system. Oh, we have the old-fashioned system of bells, and also something rather recent. The Gigantic is one of the first ships to install it. You see that glass case over there, gentlemen?
The one with a lot of tubes entering from below. Looks rather like a giant honeycomb, eh, Holmes?
Each of those tubes leads to a separate compartment of the ship. The instant a fire breaks out anywhere, smoke is immediately drawn into the glass case. I've stationed a sailor to watch that case. Believe me, gentlemen, the first wisp of smoke, we shall know it.
Yes, undoubtedly very helpful, Captain Brooks, in the case of an ordinary conflagration. But I assure you, a fire set by Smoky Joe is not ordinary. He's a master arsonist. 10 seconds after one of his fires breaks out, you're dealing with a raging inferno. Oh,
confounded, they tell me the man deserted the ship at Queenstown. That news this morning. Well, that's more than 18 hours ago. If he'd set fire, it seems to me that we'd be in flames by this time.
Not necessarily. There are many methods by which a fire can be made to break out long after the pyromaniac has left the scene of his crime. You say you found no time bombs, no flammable acids.
No, Mr. Holmes. Ever since I received word that we were in danger, I've had my men searching high and low. They found nothing, absolutely nothing. It's been a systematic search, I promise you.
Yes, but you've drawn a blank. And that's what comes of using system instead of brains and initiative.
Oh? And how do you propose to locate whatever it is we can't find?
By using a little logic. I shall credit Smoky Joe with having the intelligence to place his fire-starting device in the place where it'll do the most damage. The man's no amateur, Captain. He knows his business. Then I shall investigate that place and remove his handiwork.
Holmes, you're bragging again.
Not at all, my dear Watson. I think I may promise I shall have discovered the menace inside of half an hour. I only hope Joe's little device doesn't do its nasty job before then.
Half an hour. It's now 11:30 exactly. You think you can solve this problem by midnight?
Yes, Captain. With any luck, I think I can promise you a placid and uneventful New Year.
Captain Brooks.
Yes, Mr. Brown. What seems to be the trouble?
The wireless engineers who wishes to report something's wrong with his apparatus. Both the sending and receiving equipment have suddenly gone out of commission.
I don't like that. What does he think is
the matter? Pardon me, Captain. Can you come here a minute?
Excuse me a moment, gentlemen. The wheelsman is following me. What's the trouble, Jerry?
It's the compass, sir. It's spinning like a top. I can't figure out what's got into it. Never seen the light except once in some magnetic storm.
Great Scott, this is incredible. Now what?
It's the engine room calling, Captain.
I'll take it. Hello? Yes, Captain Brooks speaking. The blazes, you say? Well, do the best you can.
Seems to be the difficulty, Captain.
The dynamos are slowing down. They can't figure out why.
Good Lord, sir. That's why the lights are getting dim.
Blazes with the lights. Without dynamos, we've no forced draft for the furnaces. We'll never keep up enough steam pressure to drive the ship. In no time at all, we'll be drifting helplessly in the Atlantic, in the middle of the reefs that surround the Scilly Isles.
Jolly way to spend New Year's Eve, eh, Holmes?
It could be worse, you know.
How?
The ship could be on fire. That's the real menace, to which these other threats are but the prelude, I fancy.
For the love of heaven, what are we to do?
Keep calm and use whatever intelligence the Lord has endowed us with. Captain Brooks, I suggest you and as many officers as you can spare join the holiday celebration that's undoubtedly going on in order to keep discipline in case there's any disturbance.
Very good, Mr. Holmes. There's a New Year's dance going on in the large ballroom. It's on sea deck.
And meanwhile, if you can spare us someone to guide Watson and myself.
Oh, of course. And Mr. Brown here is our purser. He knows the ship as well as anyone aboard.
I'm sure he does. Very well, Mr. Brown. If you'll lead the way, I think Dr. Watson and I would like to go below.
And investigate the engines?
No, Mr. Brown, even lower than that. What we're looking for is apt to be rather close to the furnaces, I imagine.
These iron stairs go round and round to make me dizzy. Maybe it's the heat down here.
Yes, we're getting close to the furnace room. If you listen, you can hear the beast stoking.
Grim way to earn a living, eh, Holmes?
Stop a minute. Where does that lead, Mr. Brown? That small corridor with a heavy metal door at the far end.
That's the bullion room, sir, where gold is kept.
Very interesting. Suppose we take a look, eh, Watson?
I've always wanted to see those gold bars you hear so much about.
I'm afraid that won't be possible, Dr. Watson.
Why not?
Well, as you can see, the door is locked and sealed. It was done by the port authorities before we left New York.
That door won't be opened until the port authorities unseal it when we reach Southampton.
You mean that room in there wasn't opened when the captain ordered the ship searched for incendiary material?
No, Mr. Holmes. But it's quite impossible for anyone to place a firebomb or anything of the sort in there. As you can see, the seals are still intact.
Quite. These seals are intact. But are they the ones put on in New York? I doubt it. Let's have a look. Yes, interesting. Very interesting. These are not the original seals.
Oh, how can you tell, Holmes? They look intact to me.
Exactly, they are intact. But here in the crack of the door sill are bits of broken seals. But these seals are not even chipped.
By Jove, yes, of course. The original seals were hacked off and then replaced after someone had finished picking the lock and robbing the room inside.
I doubt if robbery was the motive, Watson.
Well, for what other reason would anyone want to break into a room full of gold bullion?
It all depends. What lies directly below that room, Mr. Brown?
Well, let me see. Well, nothing of any great importance, Mr. Holmes. Just coal piles.
The coal piles? Good Lord. I think we shall have to break the seals again, Mr. Brown. Here, Watson, help me.
But the door is locked, Mr. Holmes. Even after the seals have been removed, we shall have to get the key from the captain.
No time for that. Hand me my burglar tools, Watson.
Very well.
But, good heavens, you can actually pick a lock with those things.
If Holmes ever turned thief, Mr. Brown, even the Bank of England wouldn't be safe.
Yes, that should do the trick. Now, if you'll help me draw the bars, Watson.
Yes, with pleasure. Well, there you are, Holmes.
Now, let's see.
It's black in there, isn't it?
Is there light inside, Mr. Brown?
No, Mr. Holmes, I'm afraid not.
Then we shall have to prop the door open. The light from the corridor will have to do for our investigations. Come on, Watson.
Holmes, that smell. Phew. Strong and acrid. Like sulfur, only with more bite.
Seems to be coming from this large tin. Suppose I light a match.
Oh, this villain, stop!
Don't be alarmed. I know better than to light a match around a tin which is leaking sulfuric acid. I only wanted to know how much you knew about Smokey Joe's incendiary device, Mr. Ludwig Brown, spelled B-R-A-U-N, if I'm not mistaken.
So you recognize me?
Yes, that dueling scar over your left eye. It's rather a giveaway, don't you know?
So you have found how we are going to set fire to the ship by having the acid drip through a hole in the floor under the coal beneath. The first shovelful of that acid-soaked coal that goes in the furnace and the hold of a ship will be a blazing inferno. Nothing could put out that fire.
Don't you mean that's how you were going to start the fire?
My dear Mr. Holmes, you do not think we will let a small obstacle like the famous Sherlock Holmes stand in our way?
Now listen to me.
Don't raise your fist to me, I'll let you have it.
Never argue with a Luger pistol, Watson.
Well,
that's the first sensible remark you've made, Mr. Holmes. I'm sorry to leave, but the stokers should reach the sulfuric acid impregnated coal in about 10 minutes, I believe. So I must be going. This room will be a roaring oven once it starts. You'll be rather badly overdone, gentlemen. Goodbye, then. So sorry I cannot say auf Wiedersehen.
The door. He's bolted it. Even you can't open it now, Holmes.
Shut up, Watson. Help me look for the opening.
What opening, for heaven's sake?
The opening that leads to the tube that ends in the captain's new fire-detecting machine. It should be somewhere near the ceiling.
But, Holmes, I can't see a thing in this black hole of Calcutta.
You can feel, can't you?
Thing, Holmes. The wall on this side of the room is as smooth as an egg.
Confound it. If we could see for half a minute, it would... Hello, I've got something.
Yes?
Yes, a small grating here in the upper corner. This must be it. Now, if we can make a smudge of some sort. Watson, bring me a piece of paper.
Paper? Where would I find a piece of paper?
Then bring me anything I can burn. A bit of cloth, a piece of... Yes, by Jove, rope. Bring me a piece of the rope that's tied around one of the boxes that contain the bullion.
Very well, if I can find a box that...
Oof. Now what?
I found it. Confound it. The knots are tied so tight.
Blazes with knots. Cut the rope, Watson. Use your pocket knife.
Oh, very well. There you are, Holmes. It's a short length, I'm afraid.
I only want enough for a smudge. Nothing like a bit of hempen rope to...
Holmes, for heaven's sake, you're not going to set a match to that thing in here. There'll be an explosion.
Have to take the chance, Watson. With any luck, the sulfuric acid fumes won't be too concentrated up here near the ceiling. Well, here goes. One, two. Now, if we can persuade the rope to smolder. Yes, there she goes.
Certainly makes plenty of smoke, eh, Holmes?
The important thing is being drawn up to the grating.
How long before they come to investigate, do you suppose?
It all depends on the mental acumen of the sailor who's watching that fire-detecting machine.
Well, let's hope he's brighter than he looks. It may be my imagination, but it seems to me I can feel the metal flooring under my feet beginning to get hot.
Most things in 1948 will cost you a great deal more than you've paid in other years. That's why it's sensational news to know that you can get Clippercraft suits in 1948 for only $40 and $45. Clippercraft top coats and overcoats for only $40, and sport jackets for only $26.50. And isn't it as good a time as any to decide to get the most for your money? You've every right to expect long wear, correct styling, good taste, comfort, and perfect fit. And you get all these to an astounding degree in Clippercraft clothes. And you get them at incredibly modest prices. It's, of course, American production genius applied to the making of fine clothes that does the trick. It's the unique Clippercraft plan, concentrating the buying power of 924 of the nation's leading independent stores from coast to coast. You get the benefit of this plan at your own locally owned store, the store you can trust. Selling expensive clothes at inexpensive low prices at the nation's finest independent stores is the great big idea behind the Clippercraft plan. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suit, top coat, and overcoat. In Manhattan, Saks 34th, Broadway 34th, John Wanamaker Men's Stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street. In Brooklyn, Abraham and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
Now let's rejoin Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, locked in the smoke-filled bullion room of the Gigantic.
Good Lord. How long did it take for them to get us out of here? That smoke's suffocating.
Calm yourself, Watson. It can't be more than 3 minutes since we lit this smudge. Yes, I can hear someone running down the iron staircase.
I can't hear a blasted thing. How do you...
Hello? Hello in there?
Get us out.
We're in here.
Open the door. What a relief.
How in thunder did you two get locked in here? What's all the smoke?
No time for explanations, Captain. Stop them stoking the furnaces. Flood the coal piles with water. They've been soaked with sulfuric acid.
Good Lord. Thank God. Gates, stop the firing. Stop the pumps in the engine room.
Well, that's that, Holmes. What do you suppose has become of that dastardly purser?
We'll let Captain Brooks take care of him, Watson. Unless I'm very much mistaken, Mr. Brown is going to wish he'd never gone to sea. Well, come along. Let's go upstairs and join the festivities. I think we rate a bottle of champagne.
Well, to blazes with the champagne, I need a double brandy. Eight bells. Let's see, that'd be...
Midnight, Watson. Happy New Year, old fellow.
Happy New Year, Holmes, and many of them. But, don't you think you could manage to have them not quite so hair-raising?
And have you getting fat and lethargic? You know, that would be unhealthy, not to say boring.
Oh, so now it's for my sake we indulge in all these horrendous escapades, eh? Find a bit of logic, that is.
Elementary, my dear Watson. Elementary. But here's the ballroom. Suppose we join the party.
Fine, my dear.
Dr. Watson, that was an exciting way to spend New Year's Eve.
It was a bit too exciting, Mr. Harris, if you ask me.
Doctor, did they catch the purser?
Oh, they did indeed. Mr. Brown and five of his accomplices were thrown in the brig. That was the end of the disasters in the British Maritime Service.
When did Holmes first suspect the purser was the villain of the piece?
When he came out of the bridge and threw his overcoat. on a chair near to the compass, whereupon the compass went berserk. Holmes immediately suspected the code contained a powerful magnet of some sort.
And was he right, Doctor?
My dear Mr. Harris, was Sherlock Holmes ever wrong? But come, fill your mug and let us wish our radio friends a prosperous, happy, and peaceful New Year.
Indeed we do, Doctor. And now, Dr. Watson, would you like to give us a hint about next week's story?
Next week, I think I'll tell you how Holmes and I trapped a famous jewel thief right in our own rooms in Baker Street by the use of what was then a fabulous new invention, the gramophone.
The makers of Clippercraft clothes and 924 leading stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Lochran, with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Mazarin Stone. If you'd like to attend the Sherlock Holmes broadcasts in New York, see your local Clippercraft dealer, and he'll tell you how to obtain your tickets. This is Cy Harris speaking to Clippercraft Clothes Command, wishing you a happy and prosperous New Year from all of us at Clippercraft. This is the world's largest network serving more than 450 radio stations.
Ah, jolly good, jolly good. Auld Lang Syne and all that. Well, if I were a really, really good host, I would have gone to see Game of Shadows before I ran this episode, and I could have given you a review. But, alas, I did not have time to go see the movie. However, every review I've heard so far has indicated that it's a rollicking good time, with good action, good acting, and good comedy. I look forward to seeing it. Well, this being the last episode that I'm going to run for the year of 2011, and everybody usually brings out their top 10 lists or their top 100 lists or whatever, I thought I'd talk about some of the movies that I've seen this year. In fact, I only saw 6 movies in the theater this year. So I thought I'd list those for you and talk about each of them briefly. And these are in no particular order. I did go see 3 superhero movies. I saw Thor when it first came out, and I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a great adaptation of the comic series. It brought enough of the comic book continuity along, but it adjusted where it needed to for the movie universe. The other Marvel movie that came out this year that I saw was Captain America, which again was a great movie. I really enjoyed the origin story and just the way that it developed. I thought they did a good job with the Red Skull, which I was a little bit worried about. I was also a little bit worried about Chris Evans playing Captain America, thinking of him only as Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four movies, which I thought he did a great job of Johnny Storm, so I was worried that he wouldn't translate well into Captain America, but yeah, he sold it. He was good. I also did go see Green Lantern with my family. And though I agree with some of the complaints that many people have, I thought generally it was a good movie. It had some issues, but I thought it was fun. The kids enjoyed it. You know, some of the issues I saw were the kind of anticlimactic ending. I thought the stuff with the Hector character was a lot better than the Space Force alien out there. And I didn't have as big of a problem with the costume as everybody did. The mask was kind of ridiculous, but I did like the motion of the costume, even though it was all CGI. I thought that worked pretty well. Just if they could have done something better with the mask, it would have been a lot better. And I can't fault any of the complaints about the movie trying to decide whether it was a space movie or an Earth movie, or it seemed to bounce back and forth too much. But I think they set it up for a good sequel, and I do look forward to that if it ever happens. Another movie which I went to go see was Super 8, and I really, really liked that movie. I thought the actors, the kids, did a really good job. They really sold the emotion on there. And nobody tried to upstage the scene. I just liked the way it all came together. There was a little bit of a horror element, a little bit of nostalgia, a little bit of just good sci-fi action. It was very good. I liked it. I also took the family to go see Cars 2, which again, a lot of people were disappointed with, but I thought for what it was a great movie. I don't think every Pixar movie has to be epic. And while this was definitely no Toy Story sequel, as each one of those outdid its predecessor, but it was a good, fun movie. The last movie that I went to see in theaters was The Muppets. And again, we took the whole family. We all enjoyed it. It was good fun. Again, it had a lot of nostalgia points to it. And I think they did a really good job of reinvigorating that franchise. Just the other day, I was listening to my kids in the other room. And I heard one of them say, "In control, in control." I couldn't figure out what they were talking about, so I asked them about it, and they said, it's Animal from the Muppets. So now whenever one of our kids starts to get angry and throwing a fit, we just tell them, "In control." And that gets them to laugh and settle down a little bit. So that's one good thing from the movie. But I see good things ahead for the Muppets. So that's it. That's all I saw in the theaters. I have seen several on DVD, but I don't want to go into all that, but those are the movies that I saw. Those are the movies I enjoyed. I enjoyed each one of them. I wasn't disappointed, so that was a good thing. Well, I think that's probably good for now. I'll probably come back next week and talk a little bit more about 2011, but in general, it's been a good year. I was able to start this podcast. I was able to do a lot of the things that I've been wanting to do, and the family's healthy. I have a job that I enjoy for the most part, and we're doing all right. We're getting good grades. The future's so bright, I gotta wear shades. Journey on. The Journey Into podcast is produced under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License. Please share it with your friends, but don't change it or sell it. The theme music for this podcast has been provided by Man in Space.